For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
5 at 5, brought to you as always by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. And Tyler, you may fire when ready.
So obviously, well, it ended up being the second biggest headline of the day yesterday, but obviously we now know that Jake Fromm is gone to the NFL draft, and all the question marks now surround the quarterback position at Georgia. Again, we've talked about Jamie Newman looks like a very likely graduate transfer to come in and play for 1 year. Obviously, we have Stetson Bennett. We have DeJuan Mathis. Obviously, his health. We don't know what's going on there. Of course, you have Carson Beck coming in as a true freshman. He's already on campus as an early enrollee. So now that Jake Fromm's gone, how much do you think James Coley, Kirby Smart, everybody that contributes to the game plan of the offense will be willing to mold it to the new quarterback, whether that be a Jamie Newman, who we know is more of a dual threat quarterback and can use his legs, or even like a Carson Beck, who, you know, while he is a pocket passer similar to what Jake Fromm is, he may be doing it a different way. How much do you think this offense is going to change come the fall?
I have, from what we've seen, little confidence that it will, until I see something new or different.
You think Jamie Newman would be taking snaps mainly from under center, handing the ball off, and just scrambling to get out of trouble, basically?
No, I mean, I think, you know, Georgia goes to the shotgun a lot, but Georgia's offense will still, you know, be that we're going to lead with the run and establish the run type of mentality. You know, how much RPO will be in there? I get it. Like the thing with Fromm is Fromm could run, but I understand last year you didn't want him taking a lot of hits because not a plan B. But if Fromm went down, then Georgia was going to have a hard time beating anybody.
Right.
So I get why Georgia would have been reluctant to do a lot of that. So with Newman, it might be different, although potentially even next year behind him, you're still looking at the same situation at backup quarterback with Bennett will be here, and then we'll see with Mathis through his recovery, and then Beck's a true freshman.
I'd say you have at least a little bit more experience behind you next year, and again, we don't know what DeJuan Mathis' situation is with his health just yet, but he has been in the program for a year, learned, sat, watched, that kind of stuff, so while he doesn't have the experience on the field, at least he has a little bit more knowledge than he would have had heading into this past fall.
You know, the two guys Georgia's going to have to convince, though, and I think it's the highest priority for the 2021 signing class, is to get either Caleb Williams or Brock Vandegrift.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the two guys Georgia's going to have to convince, though. If you come here, we'll maybe the offense will look different then. Because it's, like what Ed Ogeron told Joe Burrow is, we're going to change the offense. I'm not going to be able to do it this year.
Right.
Which would have been 2018.
Yeah.
Not going to be able to do it this year, but I promise you, we're going to change the offense, and he made good on that. They hired Joe Brady to be their passing game coordinator.
And in 2018, Joe Burrow was seen as your standard game manager type of quarterback because he wasn't playing in a system that necessarily fit him perfectly. You give him a system that fits him like a shoe, and you see what he can do.
No, and you could see in the last month of the season last year, leading up even to their Fiesta Bowl win over UCF, that Burrow went from a guy that was completing like at best 50% of his passes, and over the last month of the season his completion percentage shot up to like over 70. And into that Fiesta Bowl, they've got receivers all over the field and they're throwing the ball like crazy, which is pretty much a deviated from what it had looked like all season, and they carried that, as we're well aware. They have continued that and carried it on, but there was a willingness to adapt and do something different. And there are two big shot quarterbacks out there in next year's class. And I mean, I'll be honest with you, if I'm like a hot shot quarterback right now, I'm not looking at Georgia's offense as really a place where I want to go and play.
Well, and that's what really surprised me about Justin Fields decommitting from Penn State and eventually coming here to be behind Jake Fromm. It's like, I mean, did he think he was going to come here and be, the offense was going to be molded to him at some point? And again, that was Jim Chaney calling the plays, not James Coley. But I felt like Jim Chaney wasn't any more willing to mold the offense to a quarterback than James Coley is.
Well, and that's where it goes back then to, again, with all these coordinators, and even to give Coley the benefit of the doubt, is like, is he running an offense that Kirby does not want him to run?
No.
And is this what Kirby wants?
This is what Kirby wants, exactly. And of course, Kirby's more of a defensive minded head coach anyway. And, you know, they proved it for 12 games this season that if you go out there and hold your opponents under 20 points, as long as you score just above that, you're going to be fine.
Yeah. And look, this is one of those deals, too. I don't have any idea what was told to Justin Fields on the recruiting trail that got him here. And that's the thing. Maybe nope. Georgia did tell him, like, no, we'll do some things for you. And then he got here, and it was, we'll come in the game and hand off.
Yeah.
But
and have packages for you.
Yeah, but that's the, but Georgia's got to get an elite quarterback in here, because Georgia's defense next season is going to be outstanding. There is no debating that.
Right.
But if you look at the college football playoff, football has changed. And it is, you know, once upon a time, it was definitely a quarterback's game now in the NFL. And maybe for a while it was less so in college football, but not really anymore. Well, you have to have an elite quarterback.
And that kind of is a question I'll ask you here in a second, kind of relates to it, that nowadays going to a Georgia, going to an Alabama, and running a pro-style offense where you're taking all the snaps from under center, that used to mean that you were going to be very pro-ready and that scouts were going to be drooling over you because you ran the same offense that all 32 NFL teams run. Now NFL teams are more adapting to this college style of offense, so that makes a Georgia pro-style even less attractive to that point.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. What's a pro-style offense now? Look what the Baltimore Ravens are doing.
Right, exactly.
They're the hottest team in the league.
Right.
So, you know, that's finally, yeah, some of these NFL teams have gotten it. Like, that's another piece in that, if anyone has had the stomach to watch that Saban and Belichick documentary, at one point Saban brings up that most of that stuff that you see done on offense actually starts in high school.
Yeah.
That's where it comes from.
Right.
Those systems and those offenses the basics of them begin in high school, and then colleges have picked up on them, and the NFL has basically finally been forced to.
Well, and here's the thing about high school football, obviously, for the most part, outside of private schools and city schools and stuff like that, you're not recruiting athletes in high school. You basically play with what you have, and you mold your offense to your best player so they can be the most successful.
Yeah, and that's and that's like another piece too. And I've said, as a grown-up, Jake Fromm is my favorite Georgia quarterback.
Yeah.
When I was younger and a kid, it was, you know, Zaire was the guy. But right. as an adult, you've had Green, Shockley, Aaron Murray, Matthew Stafford, a lot of great. Jake Fromm has been my favorite. And not to relitigate the whole Fields and Fromm thing, but I saw something today about, like, Georgia did not let Justin Fields go. No. We would love to have kept him here.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess there's this idea of, like, well, we couldn't have, the way Fromm had been playing, we couldn't have just said, like, yeah, we'll make you our starting quarterback. But you know what? Clemson did with Kelly Bryant.
Yep.
And Alabama did it with Jalen Hurts.
In the national championship
game. Yeah. They signed Lawrence and Tua. And as accomplished and as much success and as much as they had won with Bryant and with Jalen Hurts, the obviously better guy was given the job.
Well, and competition's supposed to make everybody better. And you look at, you know, Jake Fromm definitely had a better season last year as far as statistics go, because he did have Justin Fields behind him. You go to this season and it's Stetson Bennett, and nothing against Stet the Jet, but he's not nearly the level of competitor that Justin Fields was as far as possibly taking the job away from him.
Yeah, no, and that might have been part of what went into this season too, but you also had a new offensive coordinator, and like, Jim Chaney's really good, and the drop off from Chaney to Coley with the experience that Chaney had had, and the attrition at receiver that we've talked about too is certainly another, you know, element in there.
Well, that's the thing, if Fromm came back for his senior year in 2020, obviously, you're not going to drastically change the offense for a guy that's been your starter for the past 3 years. You're going to stick to the status quo. But now you have this opportunity, as good of an opportunity as you've had in several years, to finally make some tweaks and change some things up, because whoever's going to be starting will be starting their first game for the Georgia Bulldogs come, September the...
Labor Day.
7th, yeah, Monday night.
Whatever that Labor Day
is. Yeah, Monday night against Virginia. So, you know, here's your chance.
Well, to me, who you're really trying to impress and wow, in my opinion, is Caleb Williams and Brock Vandegrift.
Yeah.
To get one of those two to sign here, because those two are guys that would, you know, fall into that category when you're just looking at pure recruiting rankings.
Right.
Of, like, those are those are elite quarterbacks, and those are that's where these quarterbacks that we keep seeing show up in the playoff. And that's what Fromm was.
Right.
I mean, Fromm was the 44th rated recruit in the country coming out of high school. Look at the last three before Mathis and Beck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talking about signing day and Georgia's, you know, how well Georgia's done in recruiting. Well, part of that is the quarterbacks were, you had Fromm, Eason was the number five overall recruit, and mm-hmm. Fields was number two in the country.
Yep.
And again, Brock and Mathis, in no way writing them off, but just going pure on recruiting rankings, because that's all I know about them. I've never seen either one of them play.
Yep.
Is they, you know, one was ranked in the 300s coming out of high school, the other in the 200s. That's a big difference in what Georgia had been recruiting at quarterback versus what's on the roster now. But what you've got with Vandergriff out there and with Williams is more in line with what Georgia had been bringing in here.
Right.
But two of them ended up transferring.
Yep.
And Fromm now is leaving early for the NFL.
And there's, you know, with you look at Tom Brady putting the thing on Instagram, I guess it was yesterday, saying that he's not done yet, but he gave no indication that he was going to be coming back to the New England Patriots. I mean, Jake Fromm is a Patriot. It's not that far-fetched.
No, I mean, I think Fromm is, you think about those teams that made the playoffs that have aging quarterbacks, or even one like the Chargers, if they didn't take Herbert, where they're drafting, I think they're, what are they picking, sixth or seventh? If they passed on Herbert, they pick again 37th. They could, the Chargers pick sixth, and then they pick again at number 37. You know, that could be an ideal spot for Fromm, too.
Right. Speaking of NFL quarterbacks, transition to my next question. Looking at all the quarterbacks that have won the Super Bowl, with the exception of Russell Wilson, they've all been, or in the past several decades, they've all been your traditional pro-style pocket passing type quarterbacks, and that's kind of been something that's kept the, reputation of that's the kind of quarterback you want for an NFL team. If a Lamar Jackson, if a Patrick Mahomes wins the Super Bowl this year, how much is that going to shift even more teams to looking for those type of quarterbacks coming out of college?
Oh, absolutely it will. The NFL is a copycat league. Like, think about the draft immediately following the Seahawks Super Bowl win over the Broncos with the Legion of Boom.
Okay, so the 2014
draft. Was that 2014? Yeah. So was it would have been the 2015 draft? Or
no, it would have been the 2014 draft, because that was the 2013 Seahawks.
Okay. All right, so the 2014 draft. Here are the number of that draft set a record for the number of defensive backs that went in the first round.
Okay.
You had Justin Gilbert, Kyle Fuller, Calvin Pryor, Haha Clinton Dix, DeQuez Denard, Jason Verrett. That's how many. Anyway, how many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 defensive backs went in the first round of that following draft. And I just don't think that was a coincidence that Seattle, with the Legion of Boom, won the Super Bowl, and then the follow-up draft, you had a record set for the number of DBs that were drafted in the first round.
Well, and how much could that potentially affect where Jake Fromm goes? Because, of course, he is your traditional under-center pocket passer type. And if, you know, it's Mahomes and Lamar Jackson in the AFC Championship game, and then, you know, one of those guys ends up winning the Super Bowl over, you know, an Aaron Rodgers or, a Kirk Cousins or something like that, your traditional pro-style quarterbacks, I mean, could that make Fromm drop a little bit?
Outside of there's the clear top three guys with Burrow, Tua, and Herbert.
Yeah.
And then in that next tier, though, you're talking about Eason, who's also not in that category, and even the guy at from Utah State, Jordan Love.
I was going to say, he might jump up a little bit based on that kind of thing, just to kind of try and get that kind of guy.
Yeah. And that's why I think, Fromm's got a shot once the draft process starts and he gets to the combine and starts interviewing with teams of putting him in a position where at least he's the first guy in that second tier of players. Like, Fromm is obviously, he's not passing Herbert.
Right.
Tua or Burrow, but could he at least get ahead of Eason, Love? I saw Hawaii's quarterback Cole McDonald has announced he's entering the NFL draft too, so throw his name in there.
Is he going to be the first Hawaii quarterback since Colt Brennan to enter the draft?
Probably, yeah.
Brennan was, he was regarded as like a mid-round pick until that Sugar Bowl, then he went undrafted by the Redskins.
Yeah. I would think
because I can't think of any other quarterbacks they've had since then. notable enough, at least.
Yeah, because I was like, that Timmy Chang was before
that
Brennan.
Was before Brennan. Yeah. Because he set a lot of records that Brennan ended up breaking.
Yeah, but he wasn't drafted. Brennan got taken in the sixth round.
Oh, so he was drafted. Okay. But he was still projected as more of a mid-round pick until he played Georgia's defense in the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, Georgia ruined his draft stock. You know what he should have done? Sat out the game.
That's right. Well, that was before that was popular.
I know it is.
And that was like the biggest game in the history of Hawaii football.
Yeah, but he probably still should have sat it out. Because if he hadn't had that performance against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, he probably would have gone higher than the sixth round.
Yeah, for sure.
But you know what? He's the only quarterback, period, that's been drafted from Hawaii. No, some guy named Larry Arnold was taken by the Rams in 1970.
Okay.
But.
So Cole McDonald could be the third ever Hawaii quarterback drafted.
Yes.
And he's one of those guys. He's an exciting player. After watching them play against Arizona in week zero, I really thought that he was going to be that like dark horse Heisman guy from the group of five that is not going to get to New York but still can garner a lot of votes. And it didn't end up being that, but he's still a fun player and put up some decent numbers.
Well, then they ended up beating Oregon State, so they had a couple Pac-12 wins, and you know, I enjoyed watching them on Christmas Eve.
That's right, in the SoFi Hawaii Bowl.
Yeah, that was a fun game against BYU. There were some officiating shenanigans in that.
Now McDonald went out of the game and came back in, though, right?
Yeah, which evidently is something Hawaii had done throughout the year.
Okay,
which kind of didn't make any sense because Hawaii scored 30-something points in the first half and then got shut down until right there at the end when they were able to put that drive together. But apparently that's something that they had done all year, was take McDonald out and put the other guy in.
I was going to say, I can't think of that many quarterbacks that, against their will, were taken out of their last college game before being drafted.
Yeah.
That's not something you see often.
No. But maybe that's why he's leaving early. He got sick of that.
I mean, where do you see a guy like him landing? I might have to say he'd be a late round pick.
Yeah, I have no idea.
You know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Just a team that's trying to do something wildly different. I don't know, maybe he could be a good backup to Kyler Murray out in Arizona.
Maybe Matt Ryan.
Yeah. I think we're probably a year or two away from getting Ryan's eventual replacement.
So you'll stick with Schaub as the backup for...
Well, I don't know if they re-signed him for this year or not. Because, I mean, we're paying Schaub like $8 million, $10 million just to sit on the bench outside of that Seattle game. Because, again, Matt Ryan's been a very healthy quarterback his entire career. It's good to have an experienced backup like that. But I imagine, you know, within a year or two, Matt Ryan's replacement's going to get drafted so he can marinate and learn the system before eventually taking over. Because... you know, Matt Ryan's only got so many years left.
Well, I say every year, I'm a proponent of, I think even if you do have a guy like Matt Ryan who seemingly has years left, I think NFL teams should still just be drafting quarterbacks like New England has consistently done with Tom Brady there, because then you, the very least, you can end up, you play him in the preseason, some team falls in love with him, and then you flip him for a draft pick.
They drafted Kurt Benkert out of Virginia this past year, and he actually had a pretty strong preseason. He ended up getting hurt, though. He was actually engaged in some Twitter beef after the Saints lost over the weekend.
Oh, really?
And people are like, dude, you're like the practice squad quarterback. What are you doing? To which I'm like, that's a pretty fair argument.
Yeah. You gotta love a good Twitter beef.
Of course.
Yeah.
But no, he was a guy that showed some flashes. Now, I don't think he's ever going to be an heir apparent, but if it was just an emergency situation for him to handle a half for the Falcons, I don't think it'd be that bad.
Well, that's what I'm like for Atlanta. Like, throw him into a situation. Some team thinks, hey, this guy's got something. And then did Atlanta draft him or sign him as a free agent?
I'm pretty sure we drafted him. I have to check.
Well,
I mean,
either way, like, you just end up flipping him for maybe a fourth round pick or something.
Yeah, that's the thing, is the Falcons have either drafted or picked up quarterbacks late in the draft or as free agents and just kind of held them for their rookie contracts when they expire, cut bait with them, you know. And again, never guys that are going to supersede Matt Ryan, just kind of there of a just in case kind of scenario.
Yeah, I don't ever think that's a bad idea. And maybe you do get to a point where your quarterback is done, you need to move on, then you're in a spot where maybe you've already got a guy on the team that you took a flyer on several drafts earlier, instead of being in a position where you're really desperate then, because you absolutely have to draft someone now.
Okay, so he was signed by the Falcons. He wasn't drafted, placed on IR on August 6th. Okay, he had a toe injury in the preseason. He signed a contract with the Falcons. So this was 2 years ago, actually, 2018. He signed an extension or a future contract with them on New Year's Eve of 2018, and then he had the injury this preseason.
Well, if he's in Twitter beef with Saints fans, then he fits right in there.
I guess so. Yeah. Somebody just like replied with like a couch.
He's
picture.
An all-star Falcon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's good.
But no, the Falcons drafting like a first or second round quarterback, I think we're a year or two away from that.
Yeah, I mean, that might be too high, but even in New England, as it turns out, didn't get enough for Garoppolo, but they drafted him in the second round, and they had Brady. So,
well, at that point, you didn't think Brady was going to play, you know, past the age of 39.
Right, but the goal, like, they did it with Ryan Mallett. They ended up doing it with Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah.
You know, but you take a guy in, like, the fourth round and end up getting a second-round pick for him sometime down the road.
I tell you who made out like thieves for their trade and draft pick is the Falcons with Mohamed Sanu.
Yes.
Sending him to New England
for a second-round pick. Yeah, because they got a second-round
pick. And, I mean, New England didn't do too much with him.
No, New England was desperate for some playmaker at receiver. They were so desperate. They had Antonio Brown for a while and even Josh Gordon. But, no, that's one that, in hindsight, they should regret if they don't, because they don't have a second-round pick now, and instead they just have Mohamed Sanu, who did nothing for them.
Yeah, and the Falcons get—so they would pick, well, I guess that's like 40—pick number 47 would be their, like, original pick. And then it's only got—
55.
55, okay.
Yep. Yeah, the Falcons have four picks in the top 100, 16, 47, 55, and 78.
I swear, if they draft that D2, what was that safety that you were telling me about?
It's from Hardin-Simmons, I think. Yeah,
or whatever.
No, they're going to do that. Just go ahead and prepare yourself.
I know they are.
That's going to be their pick 109 in the fourth round.
Probably so. The guy that's never going to see the field.
Yeah. Dimitrov's probably at Hardin-Simmons Pro Day as we speak.
I remember they drafted a linebacker out of, I think it was South Dakota State, Tyler Starr, and literally every single game day he was on the sidelines in sweats.
Yeah, here's a three-round Falcons mock.
Okay.
Again, with the caveat of, like, who are these people doing these mock drafts? A.J. Epenesa, the defensive end from Iowa.
Okay, I don't hate that.
The cornerback from Clemson, A.J. Terrell, would be the—
okay.
First pick of the second round. The pick that they got from New England, they would use on Shane Lemieux, the guard from Oregon.
All right.
Oregon had a good O-line.
I was going to say, and we still need to work on the O-line.
And then here we go, third round, number 78. How about an offensive tackle from UConn?
Oh, yes, because UConn is known for their amazing offensive line.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, that would be a Falcons move.
Sounds about right. Sounds like a Dimitrov draft. He probably wrote that himself.
Yeah, the first three aren't bad. Iowa, Clemson, Oregon. But then you go, all right, pick, because something tells me the offensive tackle from UConn, you could probably get him in the fifth or sixth round.
He's got to look like the smartest guy in the room at least once.
Yeah.
That's just what he does.
All right, the 5 at 5 brought to you as always by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.